How Marxists subvert churches and society. We are seeking to apply the lordship of Christ to all areas of life, and we will find running interference and seeking to frustrate this are Marxists. And Karl Marx, not someone I'd normally quote from, but even a stopped clock is right twice a day. The first battlefield is the rewriting of history. And have his disciples ever been busy rewriting, distorting, reinventing, completely changing history? You see, to control the future, you must take control of the past. Or at least people's perceptions of the past. You wonder why they're attacking monuments? Well, it's very important. It's part of the battle against history. Now, my source for much of what I'm going to be dealing with this morning is the greatest Russian author of the 20th century, Alexander Solzhenitsyn. He was a Russian Red Army captain who fought in the Second World War, and he never questioned the rightness of the revolution, of the Soviet Union, of the communist atheist doctrines, until he was imprisoned for 8 years in the Gulag, in the concentration camps, for writing in a private letter to someone a comment that sounded possibly critical of the boss, Chairman Joseph Stalin. 8 years in the concentration camp. Alexander Solzhenitsyn became the most famous Russian author of the 20th century. He won a Nobel Literature Award winner in 1970. Now, he became so phenomenal that today, four of his books are set work books in Russia, required reading in their schools. Vladimir Putin has made Alexander Solzhenitsyn a man who was once banned, and you could go to jail, sorry, you could go to concentration camp in the Gulag for having a copy of his book. Now it is mandatory reading in Russian schools. He wrote The Gulag Archipelago, which is a devastating expose of the 1,200 Soviet concentration camps which chewed up the lives of more than 50 million people. Most of those Christians, Orthodox Christians, were killed, worked to death, starved, or even frozen to death in the Arctic hellholes of Siberia. He also wrote One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich, which is grueling, based on his experience as a slave in Soviet Russia working in the gulags. And this book is exhausting, and at the end he says, this was just one day in the life of Ivan Denisovich. There was, and he gives how many thousands of other days, adding up to 8 years afterwards. This man was banned from Russia, exiled from Russia from 1974. He returned in 1994 to great honor under a Boris Yeltsin's government, and now he is considered one of the greatest Russians by the Russians themselves, even though he was banned by his own country for years for what he wrote. Here's a quote from Alexander Solzhenitsyn. The generation now coming out of Western schools is unable to distinguish good from bad. Even those words are unacceptable. This results in impaired thinking ability. It is a universal law. Intolerance is the first sign of an inadequate education. An ill-educated person behaves with arrogant impatience, whereas truly profound education breeds humility. Well, that is not being done on our university campuses. You don't see humility, you see arrogance. That's an indication they're not getting an education, they're getting an indoctrination. Marxists aim to demoralize their targeted victims by psychological warfare. Now, in the army, you had a term, PSYOP, psychological warfare, and psychological warfare enemy forces is aimed to break down the morale of your enemy. Now, most of us expect that in a time of war. What you don't expect is it in a time of peace. But you see, to the Marxist, we're in a time of war. There is no peace and there is no civilian. They're targeting us continually with psychological warfare. And they've got many ways of doing that. PSYOPs. They use guilt manipulation. Politics of guilt and pity to make you feel guilty. Now, I'm sorry to say, I've seen this in missions, conferences, and churches too. From the time I've been converted, I've heard people coming up with, how many Bibles do you have at home? There are people out there who don't have one Bible and people who've got to exchange. And I've been churches in Eastern Europe where they come with a page of the Bible and they swap. It's that one Bible, they've broken it up and they take turns. But should you be helping to get Bibles in the hands of the unsaved because you've got too many Bibles at home? Surely it should be loving your neighbor, obeying the Great Commission, honoring the Lord. But we use guilt manipulation. There's nothing wrong with you having 10 Bibles in your home if you study them and use them. Similarly, we shouldn't make people feel guilty for God's blessings. I remember when my wife gave birth to our first child, Andrea, I had somebody after we gave our announcements saying to me, yes, well, of course she's born healthy because you're privileged and you live in a privileged environment. How many people have stillbirths and this and that and the other and so on and so forth because of unhygienic? Wait a minute, am I meant to feel guilty because my child was born in a healthy, sophisticated, sterilized environment? Why should we feel guilty about God's blessings? We should be grateful and, out of generosity and love and concern for our neighbors, seek to help them improve their hospitals. Vilifying the victims and victimizing the villains. Do you know how many people laugh about and make jokes about the torturing to death of white farmers in South Africa? They deserve it because they're white. Really? Including a three-year-old girl who was staked out, crucified on a table, gang raped in front of her father, had his eyelids cut off so that he couldn't not see, doused with petroleum and set alight. People who are killed with blow torches, who have their skin peeled off, tortured, and they're people who joke about it and say, well, so what? They're white, they deserve it. They've dehumanized the people. They don't even know the people. They don't know anything about those individuals. And then they victimize the villains that somehow or another, the villain isn't to blame. And then how many times have you heard, well, of course that girl was raped. Why was she dressed like that? Why was she in that part of town at that time? Wait a minute. How does a person deserve to be raped? Maybe they were unwise, but the victim should not be villainized. The villain should not be victimized. How often is it that somehow or another the criminal is the victim and the victim is the villain? They use the politics of guilt and pity. In fact, R.J. Ross Jr. wrote a book on that very term, the politics of guilt and pity. It seeks to undermine Christianity and it seeks to undermine people's love for their nation. In our country, Solzhenitsyn said, the lie has become not just a moral category, but a pillar of the state. The Soviet Union is built on lies. Well, I'm sorry to say, most countries today are built on lies. Why am I dealing with this? Under the duties required in the Ninth Command, the Westminster Larger Catechism lists the duty of preserving and promoting the truth. You see, every command has both a positive requirement, a duty required, and a negative, a sin forbidden. The Ninth Command requires us to stand for the truth. We have a duty to stand for the truth and to do so from the heart. We have the duty to speak the truth and only the truth in matters of justice and judgment. People lay their hand on a Bible in a court of law and raise their right hand and say, I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help me God. That's what it should be. We, especially Christians and people in the ministry, have the duty to speak the truth at all times, the duty to study and practice everything true, noble, lovely, and of good report. Under sins forbidden in the Ninth Command, the Westminster Standards includes the sin of giving false evidence, the sin of lying, the sin of concealing the truth, the sin of misconstruing intentions. You don't have the right to determine what someone else's motive is. The amount of people who say, you only do this because, they don't know my motives. Notice what God said to Adam and Eve in the garden. What have you done? Not why have you done it. The why is not as important as the what. Did you break the law? Did you break God's commands? The what is important, but today we have a whole category of crimes called hate crimes. Now, I don't know how any crime isn't a hate crime, because you steal from someone, you murder somebody, you slander someone, it's a hate crime. All crimes are hate crimes because you're despising the rights, the life, and the property of others and their reputation. And so now, though, it would seem that, well, some murders aren't so serious. Other murders are, it depends on what we think the motives are. And of course, no judge or jury can even know what the motives are. They only can guess. What they should be dealing with, what has been done, not necessarily why it was done. The why is irrelevant. You know, my mommy dropped my dummy when I was small and I suffered irreparable psychological damage. And it's the teacher's fault and the police. Yeah. Who cares? What did you do? This is what the law says. We should be dealing with what, not why. In the case of justice I'm talking about now. The sin of perverting the truth to a wrong meaning. Truth is truth, even if no one believes it. A lie is a lie, even if everyone believes it. So, to understand how Marxists are subverting society and churches, we need to understand the heart and soul of Karl Marx. Do you know Karl Marx is one of the most respected names in universities? They have got preschool textbooks in this country, which I've seen, on Karl Marx, making him out to be one of the most wonderful people ever. Beautiful, full-color, illustrated books for primary schools and preschools, and you can get this in our libraries all over the place. What a wonderful man Karl Marx was. In his manifesto of 1848, Karl Marx wrote, "The theory of the communists may be summed up in a single sentence, abolition of private property. You reproach us with intending to do away with your property. Precisely so. That is just what we intend." To this end, he advocated abolition of property rights. How? By making property owners pay rents or rates to the state. Historically, before 1848, you didn't pay rent for your land because the government didn't own your land. It's your land. Getting people to pay rates and tax is a way of confiscating the land. In fact, this has happened very effectively. If you've watched Downton Abbey, you'll be aware of the fact that most of the great houses were destroyed by the taxation brought in by Lloyd George, Labour Party, and with the very express purpose of putting so much burden on the lands and estates that they would have to close down the houses, subdivide it, and build shopping malls or something where there used to be these estates. And taxation is a form of confiscation. We know people in this country who have worked hard and retired, who owed nobody anything, who had their home and their pensions, who've now had to sell their home because they couldn't afford to pay the rates and taxes, move into some small little apartment in a dangerous crime-ridden area, and go to work in the 60s and 70s into the 80s because they can't afford the rates and taxes. These are people who paid taxes all their life, worked hard, earned everything, and now were fit to retire but weren't able to. This is theft. Number two, a heavy progressive graduated income tax with the aim of penalizing the most productive, hardworking of society and giving to those who vote for their party. The way to crush the bourgeoisie is to grind them between the millstones of taxation and inflation. What is inflation? Taxation. Inflation is a hidden tax. Because if you print money, that's called counterfeiting. If the government prints money, it's called inflation. Same thing. It's a hidden tax. So, for example, my first mission by motorbike, going from Cape Town up to Johannesburg, the fuel cost me 32 rand. You used to be able to fill a vehicle with 5 rand. A 5 rand note could fill your vehicle. Today, a 100 rand note barely moves the needle out of the E. So, my first motorbike I bought in 1971 for 1,000 rand. My father bought a car, brand new, 1971 for 1,000 rand. In 2001, we bought a bicycle for 1,000 rand. Today, my son informs me that a good pair of running shoes cost over 2,000 rand. So we've gone from a car to one of a pair of shoes in the space of my lifetime. That's theft. At Independence in Zambia, one man told me he bought a car for 160 kwacha. The kwacha was equal to the pound at Independence. By the time he told me this, it cost 8,000 kwacha for a bottle of Coca-Cola. Now, we won't even go to Zimbabwe. Number three, abolition of all rights of inheritance by taxing inheritance. To tax inheritance is forbidden in the Bible, but where did they get the idea of graduated income tax, taxing property, taxing inheritance? Marxist Manifesto, 1848. These are communist ideas. And now we think it's perfectly acceptable. But wait a minute, your grandfather was paying tax throughout his whole life, and he, as the Bible says, a righteous man leaves an inheritance for his children as children's children, but now the state takes most of that through death taxes. Wait a minute, they're taxing the dead. The man already paid his taxes. How dare they tax his inheritance? Number four, Marxist Manifesto, confiscation of the property of immigrants and rebels to the state. In fact, they go beyond that. They shoot people in the back for trying to escape from the workers' paradise, like East Berlin. This is Peter Fetcher. Day after his 18th birthday, shot in the back, trying to escape from Berlin to Berlin, because he's trying to escape from the workers' paradise. Fifth point, centralization of credit in banks of the state by means of a national bank with an exclusive monopoly on money supply. Historically, before 1848, money was issued by different banks, so you could have different types of notes, and it would say on it, I promise to pay the bearer on demand £1 in gold, or £1 in gold or silver, or $1 in silver, and so on. So the piece of paper you had is a promissory note that is meant to represent, it's a certificate for the real money, which is always spoken of in the Bible in terms of weights and measures, sitting in a bank vault. Today, you've got a piece of paper that's worth nothing. It's absolutely nothing. It's smoke and mirrors, the blip on a computer screen. They created it out of nothing. And you've got to work hard for the interest on all these things, which they're just creating out of nothing. Sixth point, Marxist manifesto. Centralization of the means of communication and transport in the hands of the state. Railways, buses, telecommunications, post office, in the hands of the state. And you've seen how well that runs. Seventh, factories and instruments of production must be owned by the state. And wilderness areas must be nationalized by the state. Because you know the government's so good at everything, they make everything better. That's why everyone would prefer to go to a government hospital than a private hospital. Actually, no. Eighth point, equal obligation of all people to be put to work by the state. And of course, the Soviet Union was very serious about that with the gulags and their labor camps. Ninth, establishment of industrial armies, especially for agriculture. They called it land reform, and they did expropriation without compensation. By the way, you know what dekulakization in Russia meant, and all expropriation without compensation in all communist countries. It doesn't mean they were transferring ownership from one group of people to another. It meant all land now is owned by the state, and they will lease it, rent it to those they want, when they want to, and they'll take it away from them if they ever violate their principles. So understand, land reform isn't choosing a new owner, it's the state taking all the land in their hands, and then they lease it to people. Do you know in Zambia, for example, you can't buy your property? Your property belongs to the state. You can lease it from them for 99 years, dating from independence. So if you're going to buy a farm now, as we've done in Zambia, you could get it for 64 years. And then when you're selling it, for 58 years. So you're not actually owning the property. All the land is owned by the state in most socialist countries, but you can get a lease on it. And of course, you've got to pay taxes on it every year to make it basically not worthwhile. Tenth, combining agriculture with manufacturing industries, a gradual abolition of all the distinctions between town and country by more equitable distribution of the populace over the country. You've noticed the communist symbol is a hammer and a sickle. The sickle for the agricultural peasant, as they call him, and a hammer for the industrial worker. So you've got the workers are, by definition, workers in the city. And you've got the peasants, to use the Russian term, they are the farm laborers. But they want them to come together. The hammer and the sickle together, all the workers of the world unite. And they've always seen the workers in the city to be more leftist and the workers in the fields to be counter-revolutionary, the kulaks, they're more conservative. And so generally, that's why they've ended up starving to death the farm workers by the millions as they did in Ukraine. And you can see how the growth of regulations. There is not a government official on the planet who's read all the laws they pass in any given year. And are we meant to understand and keep them? Basically, they make so many laws that you have broken the law every single day, whether you mean to or not. So if they ever want to move on anyone, they can, because there's so many laws that not even the leaders in the government know all the laws. Number 11, free and compulsory education for all children, state schools. How do Marxists subvert society? By taking over the schools. You see, in up to 1848, all schools were private schools, church schools, mission schools, home schools. There was no such thing as state schools. That's a communist idea. The idea that the state controls education, registers teachers, and produces textbooks is a thoroughly 100% Marxist, communist, Leninist term. It's an idea the state must control the schools. If you think the state should be running schools, then you have been indoctrinated by Marxism, whether you know it or not. Quote from Nikolai Khrushchev in 1959. Your children's children will live under communism. You Americans are so gullible. No, you won't accept communism outright, but we'll keep feeding you small dose of socialism until you will finally wake up and find you already have communism. We won't have to fight you. We'll weaken your economy until you fall like overripe fruit into our hands. Well, that could be said for South Africa too. Karl Marx wrote that the abolition of religion or the illusory happiness of man is a requisite for their real happiness. Abolition of religion. In the Communist Manifesto, Marx wrote, communism abolishes eternal truths. It abolishes all religion and all morality. Do you know how many church buildings were confiscated or destroyed and shut by the Soviet Union under Joseph Stalin and Lenin? 49,000 churches closed, many of them destroyed. Some of them turned into swimming pools and so on. Do you know that under Lenin alone, before Stalin, 150,000 ministers of the gospel were murdered in concentration camps, 95,000 Solovetsky Island. Karl Marx wrote, I wish to avenge myself against the one who rules above. I shall build my throne high overhead. Cold, tremendous shall its summit be, for its bulwark, superstitious dread. For its martial blackest agony. Karl Marx wrote, new gods will have to be installed. In his drama Olenem, which notice is an inversion of Emmanuel, E-M-A-N, and so on, Emmanuel. So he wrote Olenem. It's a satanic thing they like to turn the cross upside down, turn words upside down and round about and so on. The hellish vapors rise and fill the brain. Till I go mad, and my heart is utterly changed. See the sword, the prince of darkness sold it to me. He's referring to his pen. For me beats the time and gives the signs. Ever more boldly I play the dance of death. Marx loved to quote Faust, everything in existence is worth being destroyed. Everything in existence is worth being destroyed. I heard a Marxist disciple, Alan Busack, say at Kirchentag in Frankfurt, out of the ashes of Pretoria will arise the new Jerusalem. Bishop Tutu said in 1980 when Mugabe took Zimbabwe, the kingdom of God has arrived in Zimbabwe. That would be funny if you didn't know how many people have been suffering in Zimbabwe since. If there is something which devours, I'll leap within it. Though I bring the world to ruins, the world which bulks between me and the abyss, I will smash to pieces with my enduring curses. Without violence, nothing is ever accomplished in history. Quote unquote from Karl Marx. As Alexander Solzhenitsyn said, anyone who's proclaimed violence's method inexorably must choose lying as his principle. Violence and deception go together. They need to deceive you. And if you won't follow that, they will use violence to intimidate you. This has been documented by 6 communists. In fact, the editor, Stéphane Corté, was the editor of the Communisme magazine. These were all members of the French Communist Party, but they produced this 900-page doorstopper that you could drop on the foot of a liberal and make him limp. This book documents from the communists' own files how they killed 100 million people between 1917 and 1991. Just from their own files and their own, that we have today. And of course, we don't have Red China's, they haven't fallen. But just from Russian Eastern Europe statistics, and it's gotten there, the papers signed by Lenin for executing so many 100,000 people ago and 69,000 people there and so on and so forth, and millions by Lenin and Stalin. Professor R.J. Rummel has also documented this in Death by Government. And he puts the death toll from communist socialist governments in the 20th century, including Red China, at 169 million. The greatest killers in history have been secular humanist, socialist, communist states. Now, when somebody tells you more people have been killed in wars of religion than any other, you can agree with them if they accept that atheism is a religion and humanism is a religion. Not even Catholicism comes close with the Inquisitions and so on and the Crusades to what secular humanism's done just in the last century, the 20th century, the bloodiest century in the world. Do you know, in history, more Christians have been killed in the 20th century for their faith, martyred, than all the other 19th centuries combined. The 20th century is the worst century in the history of the world. Although we've been told it's the best. This is just a few pictures of people who've suffered from Marxism in Zimbabwe, cutting people's ears and lips off, murdering Madibili people, shooting town councillors and mayors in townships, bayoneting people in the back, murdering missionaries and their babies. This is communism. Without violence, nothing can be achieved. Thus, heaven I've forfeited, I know it full well. My soul, once true to God, is chosen for hell. Do you know that Karl Marx was once a member of a Lutheran church and was catechized, baptized, and he chose to... He was Jewish, but his father, for business purposes, converted openly to Lutheranism. So he was brought up in the Lutheran faith, even though he came from a Jewish atheistic background. But at a certain point, he turned from the official religion he has turned to, and he became a Satanist. In his poem, Human Pride, Marx wrote, "With disdain I will throw my gauntlet full in the face of the world and see the collapse of this pygmy giant whose fall will not stifle my honor. Then will I wander godlike and victorious through the ruins of this world, and giving my words an active force, I will feel equal to the Creator." What does this remind you of? Lucifer. He was an archangel who wanted to be equal to the Creator. He wanted to lift himself above the throne of God, as you read in Ezekiel 14. How do you destroy the West? Corrupt the young. Get them away from religion. Encourage your interest in sex. Make them superficial. Focus their interest in sports, sensual entertainments, and trivialities. Always preach true democracies, but seize power as fast and ruthlessly as possible. Encourage government extravagance. Destroy its credit. Produce fear with rising prices, inflation, and general discontent. Encourage disorders. Foster a lenient attitude towards disorders. By specious argument, cause the breakdown of the old moral virtues, honesty, sobriety, and self-constraint. Cause the registration of firearms to leave the population defenseless. Vladimir Lenin, 1921. Sound familiar to anyone?
Yes.
I've grown up amongst these revolutions. I experienced it in Rhodesia, what today is Zimbabwe, Southwest Africa and Angola, my first mission field, Mozambique, and of course our own beloved country. Karl Marx's good friend, Friedrich Engels, wrote, "Karl Marx is a monster possessed by 10,000 devils." Now, he wasn't criticizing him. This was praise. Friedrich Engels was saying this in praise of Marx. He's possessed by 10,000 devils. And they're Christians. I've heard people call themselves Christian Marxists. That's like a God-fearing atheist. Robert Payne, a friend of Karl Marx, wrote of Karl Marx that he had the devil's view of the world and the devil's malignity. Sometimes he seemed to know he is accomplishing the works of evil. Again, not a criticism. This is praise from his friend. Karl Marx wrote he wanted to hurl gigantic curses on mankind. Marx quoted positively from Florence, "Our enemy is God. Hatred of God is the beginning of wisdom." See the inverse?
Yes.
The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. They say, no, hatred of God is the beginning of wisdom. Karl Marx never ran a company, never held a political office, never oversaw any accounts, never had a job, never had any job. He wasn't a worker. He lived on inheritances. He speculated in stock exchange. He gambled. The man was, when he heard of a relative dying, he shouted rejoicings because it meant some more money that he would inherit. Considered one of the greatest social, political, economic philosophers of all time, but all applications of his theories have ended in abject failure, every one. Karl Marx's family life was a disaster. He had 7 children by his wife Jenny, another by his household maid Helen Dumuth. 3 of Karl Marx's children starved to death. 5 of his children died prematurely. 2 of his daughters and his wife committed suicide. He must have been a bundle of laughs to live with. One of his daughters, Eleanor, married Edward Aveling, a Satanist known for his blasphemous lectures on the wickedness of gods and his poem to Satan. 2 of his daughters committed suicide. His wife committed suicide. And here, I don't know if you can sort of tell, maybe through some of these pictures or the eyes of this man, and his poor children, Eleanor Marx became one of the most famous communist woman feminist leaders in the world. And feminism has done more to take away respect and protection of women and to lower women's status and to degrade women and to bring women to where they're the most vulnerable in history. And yet, feminism was born in communism, and Eleanor Marx was the forerunner of it. Karl Marx wrote he did not love anyone. He said, I'm completely comfortable with hatred. He referred to the Slavic people, now the Russians are Slavs, as ethnic trash. And he prophesied the very name will vanish. Isn't it interesting that the Slavs spent 70 years worshipping this man who actually despised them? He dismissed Mexicans as lazy, and a lot of Mexicans count themselves Marxists today. He dismissed Negroes as frozen at prehistoric levels who would never contribute anything worthwhile to society. This man was a racist of the first order. And the funny thing is, the people he despised are some of his main followers today. Why? It's like these people who support Planned Parenthood. And Planned Parenthood was founded by a racist who wanted Planned Parenthood to abort Negro babies. And now you see people who are descended from those who call themselves Negroes singing the praise of Planned Parenthood like they're part of their liberation. Actually, they have a goal of the extermination. In the manifesto, Karl Marx wrote, we destroy the most hallowed oblations when we replace home education with social education. He means state education. Marx's dedicated disciple Vladimir Lenin declared, atheism is the natural and inseparable part of communism. We must hate. Hatred is the basis of communism. And Leonid Trotsky, do you know where Leonid Trotsky was when the Bolshevik Revolution occurred? He was in the Bronx in New York. And he heard about the revolution and he went over and he joined the revolution. He became the head of the Red Army and he murdered millions. Do people in New York know that? Trotsky came from the Bronx. Under Vladimir Lenin, one of the slogans of the Soviet Union was, we fight against God to snatch believers from him. And they do. A prominent slogan of the Soviet Union was, let us drive out the capitalists from the earth and God from heaven. Alexander Solzhenitsyn wrote, the world has never before known a godlessness as organized, militarized, and tenaciously malicious, malevolent, as that preached by Marxism. Within the philosophical system of Marx and Lenin, and at the heart of their psychology, hatred of God is the principal driving force, more fundamental than all their political and economic pretensions. They pretend to be an economic and political system. Actually, it's just a satanic anti-God movement. Militant atheism is not merely incidental or marginal to communist policy. It is not merely a side effect, but a central pivot. To achieve its diabolical, devilish ends, communism needs to control a population devoid of religious and national feeling. And this entails a destruction of faith and nationhood. Communists proclaim both of these objectives openly, and just as openly, they put them into practice. That's all a quote from Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who knew firsthand how communism works. He used to be an officer of the Red Army. They promised them freedom, but they themselves are slaves of depravity. You could put 2 Peter 2 verse 19 across every single communist socialist movement on the planet. And by the way, some people may say, oh, sure, you're not suggesting socialism and communism is the same thing. Well, yes, it was the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. You see, socialism is the pathway to communism. Socialism is the means, communism is the end. So a Christian socialist is about as oxymoron as a God-fearing atheist. Alexander Solzhenitsyn said, I've spent well now 50 years working on the history of our revolution. In the process, I've read hundreds of books, collected hundreds of personal testimonies, have already contributed 8 volumes of my own towards the effort of clearing away the rubble left by that upheaval. But if I was asked today to formulate as concisely as possible the main cause of the ruinous revolution that swallowed up some 60 million of our people, I could not put it more accurately than to repeat. We forgot God. That is why all this happened. We forgot God. Modern society, here's another quote from Solzhenitsyn. Modern society is hypnotized by socialism. It is prevented by socialism from seeing the mortal danger it's in. One of the greatest dangers of all is you've lost all sense of danger. You cannot even see where it's coming from as it moves swiftly towards you. Socialism of any type leads to a total destruction of the human spirit. To destroy people, you must first sever their roots. You wonder why I spend so much time on history and write history books? Because they're destroying our history and we need to rediscover our history or we are doomed. In keeping silent about evil, in burying it so deep within us that no sign of it appears on the surface, we're implanting it and it'll rise up a thousandfold into the future. When we neither punish nor reproach evildoers, we are ripping the foundations of justice from beneath new generations. In our country, the lie is not just a moral category, but is a pillar of the state. The timid, civilized world has found nothing with which to oppose the sudden revival of barefaced barbarity other than concessions and smiles. Marxists always employ double standards to enable them to always play the victim. They've got the victim card. They demonize the opponents of Marxism. You find you can't even debate with an average Marxist because he thinks in slogans and soundbites. He can't reason through any argument process. Along with demonizing their opponents, Marxists are seeking to promote the hero worship of their idols of their New World Order. And most obviously this is Lenin, the Lenin cult. But, you know, bear in mind, these cults are all doomed to defeat. Because, you know, Lenin is dead, but there's an empty tomb in Jerusalem. And Jesus Christ is building his church and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. And every idol will be cast down. And their very memory will be wiped out in time. The truth does not change because you don't want to hear it. Truth sounds like hate to those who hate the truth. Truth is a new hate speech. During a time of universal deceit, telling the truth becomes an offensive act. A lot of what we do is offensive because people hate the truth. I would rather be hated for speaking God's truth than hailed for trying to redefine God's word. Today we've got people trying to redefine what marriage is, even what gender is. You are being lied to. The scripture teaches us that Satan is deceiving the nations. If you find yourself in agreement with Hollywood and the United Nations on any point, you need to stop and carefully consider where you've been deceived. If you agree with the world on the major issues, then Satan has deceived you. Propaganda, the calculated manipulation of public opinion to serve political and ideological interests, is pervasive. Propaganda aims to do other people's thinking for them. Propaganda today has moved into prop agenda. Not only controlling what we think, but how we think, and what we think about. Do you know, 2 billion people on the planet were watching the World Cup soccer. Imagine you could get literally a third of the world's planet focused on the same subject at the same time. That's the power of the media. Isn't that incredible? And they don't just tell you what to think about, they tell you how to think about it. Edward Bernays, who is the founder of the first great propaganda department in America, the Committee for Public Information, CPI. He was appointed by Woodrow Wilson to turn the American people from being 85% anti-war to being 85% pro-war. Americans were very isolationist, not interested in getting involved in the First World War. And Edward Bernays, who is the nephew of the Austrian Viennese psychologist Sigmund Freud, is Sigmund Freud's nephew, he said, the conscious, intelligent manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses is an important element of a democratic society. Those who manipulate the unseen mechanism of society constitute an invisible government, which is the true ruling power of this country. He's basically saying the media controls the people and gets people to do what they want. One man who understood this was George Orwell, famous for his book Animal Farm. And 1984. Both books were separate books when I was at school in Rhodesia. And they teach you about thought crimes and thought police. Political language is designed to make lies sound truthful and murder respectable. In fact, Americans have made an art form of this. They don't murder civilians. They have saturation bombing and strategic bombing, and it's collateral damage. You don't assassinate people. You terminate with extreme prejudice. It's not an invasion, it's a technical incursion. It's not a war, it's a police action, and so on and so forth. The people will believe what the media tells them to believe. In South Africa, it's not theft, it's expropriation without compensation. It's not stealing, it's affirmative shopping, and so on. The further a society drifts from truth, the more the society hates those who speak the truth. You know the media is not a true reflection of society. Because it trivializes the main issues. It ignores the key issues. It focuses on the side issues. It reinforces deceit with manufactured versions of the fast. There's selective focus, half-truths. You are being mind-controlled, not only by what they tell you, but by what they don't tell you. Tell lie vision.
Yeah.
It's called programming for a reason. Media is controlling people. If you do not control your mind, someone else will control your mind. We must strive to be biblically accurate, not politically correct, which is what a whole biblical worldview summit is all about. Well, there's lots more I'd like to say on this, but our time is up. Are there any questions before I close this section? Great quote. I'd rather offend someone to heaven than flatter someone to hell. Yes. The bourgeoisie is a French term which comes from the French Revolution. The bourgeois were, you had the nobles, then you had the bourgeois who were the middle class craftsmen, the people who basically did most of the work. So you have the nobles, you have the bourgeois. To the communist, a bourgeois is anyone who owns property, owns anything part of the what they call the privileged elite. The people who are not Communist Party members, basically, when you get down to it. Bourgeois, the middle class, in a term. Yes, that's what it says.
I just want to say something to ask my question. I wish I had heard this before. That's why I was in front. This is you, my hand.
Well, thanks for the question.
Is it going to go to
yes.
Because I believe we need voter education ASAP before this election.
We do indeed. We are recording by audio MP3, by video, and I'm making screen captures of my PowerPoints. We will put those on our Vimeo sermon audio and video galleries and YouTube. You go to the frontlinemissionsa.org website. We've also got our Facebook page. And yes, just look to the back there. Francis is holding up the Frontline Fellowship newsletter, the latest one. On the inside, you'll see it's got a 2-page article spread on this exact presentation I've just given you. You should also put out there Joseph, the Heart and Soul of Karl Marx, because that's a supplementary to this as well. I basically married those two together.
And then another thing from America, what I shared yesterday on the Rachel Classic. And as we all know, the scriptures, which gives us the truth, we better be slapped by the truth that comes from the word of God rather than be kissed and stroked by the lie of communism. That's why in America, we as Christians have put out the American Atheist Bible that explains a lot of these issues, because in America, a lot of these ideas came forward. And when we see the same exact thing happening here in South Africa, that we are fighting in America. The Americans don't know this is the material enemy. They are being sucked in this across all the cultures in America. So this stuff's important. That's why when I said to you yesterday, Doctor, take this book that we're bringing from America, take it, rewrite it for South African culture, and together we can bridge this gap.
Yes, so how do we defeat this? Be informed, be interceding, be involved. You can see there's a lot of literature on around here at the table back there, and books and videos on the table outside. We're trying to provide good resources, and of course we're also using social media, we're using every kind of platform on the webs and so on as well. So we can make this known to our friends, our family, our neighbors, youth groups, school, classes, workplace. And there's many things we can do, but getting informed is the first step, and then getting involved and getting interceding. Informed, interceding, involved.